Time for another local hero spotlight with Claire Morneau from CISA, the local hero, folks. And this is going to be a local hero segment that has full disclosures up the wazoo about personal connections.
Hi, I'm Lisa.
And what's the name of this farm?
Growing a Bunch Farm in Ashfield.
We're in a barn with a bunch of wool in banana boxes.
It's fleece right now. It's not wool. It's not like wool yet.
What's the difference between fleece and wool?
Well, we call it fleece when it's just come off the sheep. So it's fleece or it's wool right now in this state in the banana boxes. But later it will be transformed into yarn.
Uh-huh. Which and is then, also still wool. Yes.
It is still wool. And after that, it goes into sweaters, hats, socks, shawls.
Tell us what you do here at this farm.
Well, what I do here at this small farm slash homestead, my tagline has always been growing a bunch of children, veggies, flowers, and wool.
This is where the full disclosure comes in. I know all of your children very well. You are also a grandma now.
I am.
Yes. And I've met your grandbaby as well. Yes. Our kids have homeschooled together. Talk about the homesteading aspect of it.
Well, the homesteading was my reaction to my previous New York City life. When I moved here first to Conway and then eventually to Ashfield, I just wanted out of the city. I was done with that environment. I had three little kids at the time, and we got chickens 3 days after we moved. And it's, you know, we never looked back. So about a year after we started with the gateway animal of chickens, we moved right on to sheep. And we've had as many as 8 sheep at our farm, so we're not huge. But we love our sheep. And now we're down to just our 5 original sheep that we started with. They're Shetlands, and they make beautiful wool and fleece. And so we shear them every year, or rather I have them shorn. And a few years ago, I started to make some yarn from our own sheep wool. But during COVID, I discovered I love what I'm doing. I love knitting. It's such good, like, restorative, relaxing. My children have these beautiful garments that are domestic and local and organic. And so I started looking around for more wool from other local farms. And that's where I found Brad from Four Blessings Farm in Leverett, Mass. He has a beautiful flock of sheep there. He's a weaver, and he was no longer using his wool to weave. And so I've been buying his wool since actually I went back to the 2019 fleeces that he was storing. And I've been buying it every year. He does about 17 or 18 lambs, and then he does about 20 full-grown sheep in the spring. And so I've got his lamb's wool and his full-grown sheep wool here, and soon I'm about to start skirting it.
What does skirting it mean?
Well, I can show you that.
Let's go do it.
Yardage-wise, right. How much are you getting for each one of your sheep?
Right. Okay. So really rough math would be if my sheep have a fleece that is about 7 pounds, after skirting and washing at the mill, it might only weigh 5 pounds. And roughly 5 pounds of the small 2-ounce skeins that I make would make 8 skeins per pound, so 40. So that's a sweater's quantity by far. I mean, it's actually a couple sweaters and a couple hats.
That's
you know, yeah. So even my small flock makes a good amount of wool, but when you add in Brad's 40 fleeces, and I also buy from Lonnie York at York Farm in Shelburne. I buy from a couple of shearers, a local farm down the hill in Ashfield. Now I found some wool in Coleraine Heath up there. So I get it from wherever I can. As long as it's nice enough that I can make it into a nice yarn, that's what I do with it. That's my first choice. I also make some products from the waste wool. So when we do the skirting, the leftovers, the coarse wool can be made into things like sponges, dishcloths, felt for crafting. And I also make something that I call woolly fill, which if you're a crafter and you know polyfill, then this is the wool local New England alternative to that. And then we also, I can show you this as well, we also make wool pellets. Now that's good for the wool that hasn't even been washed and has like super poopy, still has hay in there. It goes to the pelletizer that it lives in a barn in Shelburne at Peggy Hart's farm. And the way we got it, the members of Western Mass Fiber Shed worked together, particularly Peggy and Michelle, to get a grant from the larger Fiber Shed organization that's based out in California. We got some grant money and ordered this pelletizer. So now we can put our old poopy, hay-filled, dirty wool into the pelletizer. Out pops the little pellets that look like a chicken feed, and that's a good soil amendment. We've had it analyzed at UMass. It has a nice, like, high nitrogen content and other breakdown of good minerals.
And you just put it on your gardens and it just
it
goes
in?
Or does it and does it dissolve, or what does it do?
It does. So it dissolves slowly over time. They also help hold moisture. They deter pests like slugs if they're placed on the surface around the base of the plant. And they help to aerate, like, heavy clay soil.
So we are at Growing a Bunch Farm in Ashfield with Lisa Fortin and Claire Morneau from CESA, and we're standing in front of a large wood frame with some wire mesh in between it. This is where the skirting happens, I'm assuming?
It does, yes. So one by one, I dig into my fleeces that are either in contractor bags, paper bags, or in Brad's case, banana boxes.
And it looks like you're pulling a whole bear, or I guess in this case a sheep, out of a plastic bag.
This is the fleece of our Coco.
Fresh fleeces.
Coco Chanel is her name. Now, she's actually getting, all of my sheep are on the older side, but if you feel, this is still lovely fleece. Yeah, and it goes into a yarn I call Yearling. It was our first yarn. And this is something that when kids come to our summer workshops, we will show them the whole sheep to, say, sweater process. And we will start with the skirting, and we will pick out all of these little bits of hay.
Hey.
Yes. And then what we pick out is these little short bits. These are actually little bits of lanolin that are all stuck together with dirt.
What's lanolin?
Oh, lanolin is like the sebum from the sheep. It's wonderful.
What's sebum?
It's like the oily stuff. You don't want too much of it on your face, but on your hands.
I don't want any sebum on my face.
On your hands, the lanolin is quite nice.
For people who have dreadlocks or like natural hair, often lanolin is used as part of hair care components to keep moisture in your hair and in your locks.
Grab some.
Wait, of this? No!
It
needs to be washed and purified.
Oh, all right.
Exactly.
Because it does smell very sheepy right now.
It does smell sheepy. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
But you can buy pure lanolin in the store, and it's wonderful, like, on your lips or chapped, you know, fingers or something like that. Yeah, it really is.
The years of breastfeeding with my wife alongside you and all your kids, lanolin came up an awful lot.
It's very healing, and it makes a nice barrier.
So this is a sheep's wool that has been shorn, but the sheep is still alive, right?
Oh, yes.
So how does this all stick together like this? Well, how come if you cut somebody's hair, it comes off in big clumps?
Right.
It doesn't stick together in one giant piece.
But it can. It really
depends. I guess
depends.
If it's kind of like it's dreadlocked wool, right?
Oil?
Well, it's not, because it comes apart very easily. It's just held together by the crimp, I think, and the lanolin. Yeah, it's just clinging to itself. But it's so pretty. We have white as well. And we have this beautiful dark fleece.
Ooh,
that's lovely.
I love
that.
Marveling at how long the hair is. Which makes part of what makes Shetland so fun to knit with. Mm-hmm. All of that softness that you feel now stays after it's been combed, after it's been like milled, and it's so fun to work with.
Yep, and it gives it a nice drapey quality, the fact that it's longer, as opposed to shorter staples, which are very lofty and puffy and kind of like bloom.
You have all of these potential products you can make from wool like this. What are you actually doing yourself by hand? What are you doing in partnership with other businesses?
Right. A lot of times people say, oh, you spin all that wool, when they see me at a market and I've got hundreds, if not 1,000 skeins behind me. Yes. I couldn't possibly hand spin. And I have great respect for hand spinners. I love hand spun fibers and yarns. But it's just, I wanted to make more. I wanted to be a little bit bigger so that people can have an actual real product in larger quantity that's start to finish made in New England. I should include New York, because one of the mills I use is over the line in New York State. Hand spun is wonderful, but I can't make that much quantity. So I wanted to take this local resource that really was, I think, being underused. I don't just make one or two yarns, but from each of the farms I work with and each of the batches of wool I get, they're all very different. I make very different yarns, from very skinny yarns called fingering weight that you can use for socks, or, you know, lightweight tops for the more like summer or something. Actually, like what I'm wearing is lighter.
You're wearing a tank top, like a wool knit tank top.
Yes, it has bees on it.
Oh, nice.
I love it.
We just visited the bees last week.
Knitted into it with beads. Yes.
Bees and beads. Did you knit that and put the bees
in it? I did. Yeah. It's not my design. You can find those online. Thousands and thousands, hundreds and thousands of online patterns. Yeah, so anyway, I go to five different mills, and they each make very different yarns, and so people can make themselves and their family and, you know, members all sorts of different products from our yarn.
Can you talk about the mills a little bit? Because I feel like mills for fiber, or for like people who are growing sheep and like other, like alpacas, other things for like fiber and fiber crafts, mills are one of those bottlenecks that ends up happening much like processing for meat animals. And I don't think that people necessarily realize how much of a bottleneck it is to try and get your fibers processed in this area.
That is true. And that's one of the benefits of using multiple mills. So I do use Bartlett in Harmony, Maine. They're one of the oldest mills in the country. They make a very hardy yarn. I think of it as like a vintage yarn, like you could do vintage 70s, 80s look sweaters and cardigans with color work. I use them. And of course, Green Mountain Spinnery, which is about an hour away in Putney, Vermont. I mean, they're wonderful and they do a process called woolen spun. So their yarns are fluffy and lofty and warm. I use Battenkill Fiber Mill over the border in New York State in Greenwich. They make wonderful, like, I think of them as more thinner, like delicate, lighter yarns because they're a worsted spinning mill. Worsted is more like your smart wool type of wool, although that's super
wash. Seems like bested to me. Really. I think it shouldn't be called worsted. I mean, smart wool is good.
That's an old school term. That's not my term.
Smart wool is a better marketing thing than calling it. You want these worsted socks I've ever had?
You have fingering and then DK.
Also don't want to comment on that.
DK sport and then worsted, heavy worsted, and then like chunky, and then super chunky.
Mm-hmm. And then even a rug yarn.
Some pulp.
Yeah, like and rug yarn.
Yep. So worsted can mean...
Throwing terms out there.
Worsted can mean either the style of spinning, which where the yarn is combed very smoothly and all the fibers are combed until they're parallel to one another and then they're spun. Or it can refer to the size of the yarn itself. So worsted is sort of a regular or average size, not too big, not too small.
So we're at Growing a Bunch Farm in Ashfield with Lisa Fortin and Claire Morneau from CESA. I see you've got a sheep barn over there. Is that where your naked sheep are because they have now been shorn?
And they're hot. Yeah, they're hot. They were shorn Sunday morning. So they're, we're definitely going to go over and say hi, but they're going to be a little shy because they just got.
I'd be shy too if I were naked.
Yeah. They got their hair cut. It's a gentle process for them, really, but they don't like it. It requires a stranger to come and grab them, and he sits them on their bottoms, because in that position, then they can't escape, and they sort of just relent and give up. It takes probably less than 5 minutes for each one to get shorn. At the same time, he'll take a good look at their hooves, which I can't always do, and he'll make sure they don't need to be trimmed and that they're looking good. You can compare it to your kids' yearly doctor's appointment combined with a haircut.
Or like Enzo is the only one in the family who's brave enough to cut our cat's nails.
Oh, yeah.
Where the cats do not want that to happen. He just grabs them assertively and then cuts all their nails.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's we know better, but they don't understand that. So
can you talk about the difference between the wool you get from lambs and the wool you get from full-grown sheep?
Yeah, so generally the wool you get from lambs is just going to be a little softer, just like a baby's skin is a little softer than an adult's skin texture. It also sometimes is a little bit fluffier, but it's very soft. And I do have a yarn that I make from just lamb's wool. I'll say because they're part of CESA, I get that wool from Leiden Glen. They have wonderful flock. They shear, when we're there, sometimes there's like maybe close to 200 sheep being shorn. There's usually four shearers there working the whole day. And I collect the softest lamb's wool I can find because I always wanted to work with that farm. Because Kristen Nicholas is a famous knitwear designer from back in the day. She's like the OG.
She's like a rock star of knitting.
Yes,
and she's
yes.
from Leiden. Yeah.
Exactly. And she's also an amazing artist and potter. Definitely look her up. But I wanted to have that connection to their farm. And when I talked to her, she said, well, you know, we have meat sheep now. And they're, you know, there's coarser fiber. But then she got back in touch with me and said, but what about if we use the lamb's wool? I said, yes. And that goes into my yarn that I call Babe.
Sometimes you can get Leiden Glen lamb burgers at certain restaurants in the area, too. Mwah, chef's kiss and a big shout out to Kristen and Julia and all those folks there.
Can I mention one more mill?
Yeah.
Okay. I've also started working with the new mill in East Hampton that's in Eastworks, Alchemy.
Yeah.
Yep, and they've been wonderful. So I've done one batch there with Melinda, and I plan to do more.
Should we meet your naked sheep?
Yes. Okay, let me make sure the fence is off.
Thank you.
Yeah. Lisa, you did not grow up farming, but you did kind of grow up here.
I did. I grew up down in the valley in Chicopee, so pretty suburban. I didn't have any real exposure to farm life. Definitely dreamt of going to the big city, and I did that when I was about 20 and was there for 17 years. But once I started having kids and grew up a little bit, I knew I wanted to come back, be closer to my family, and have a little bit of a farm life for my kids. There's so much reward in it, yeah. I think, for kids growing up.
And now your kids are taking that on themselves as well, right?
A little bit. Depends which kid you mean.
Yeah. Clara, really.
Yes. Yeah. Clara, Zinnia is like my chicken extraordinaire lady now.
Coming out to say hi.
Yeah, hi, girls. Hi. And Willow, too, enjoys a lot of aspects of this. And then I have my artist, punk rock.
She's fully teenager. Goth, and I fully support it.
Yeah, well, that gets me back, because that was me when I was that age, so.
And she'll be graduating this weekend.
Yes, yeah, she is. Hi, girls. Someone's missing. We can go over the fence.
Okay. This is when we get to test our flexibility.
This is when I regret wearing a dress.
We'll avert our eyes, Claire. Do they wag their tails like dogs when they're happy?
When they're happy or when they poop.
Oh, well, I know that makes me happy, so what are your sheep Good. Names?
This is Coco Chanel right in the front.
Beautiful.
The black lady is Freya. The next lady came with the name Elizabeth, but I added on Elizabeth Taylor.
Nice.
And then Dora and Dana.
I guess I'm allergic to sheep.
How terrible for you.
I don't think I am.
No, because you wore that nice purple sweater.
Well, speaking of which, it's in the car!
Oh, nice!
That is the other full disclosure. Khalees is wearing the March for the Food Bank shirt that has a PBS-style logo on it. But when I said I wanted to dress up as Mr. Rogers for the Food Bank March last year, a bunch of local folks in the wool and the fabric community got together, including Swanson's Fabrics and Northampton Wools, to make me a Mr. Rogers sweater. And Lisa Fortin here at this farm is the one who dyed the wool for that sweater. And it was your sheep's wool part of that?
No.
Okay, but I want to keep that mythology going. But you did dye the wool.
I did dye the wool. Yep, that wool came from a fancy gentleman farm in Rhode Island where the sheep were just...
That makes me like an even more fancy gentleman farm.
Yep, this is how it was described to me. I actually don't know where it came from exactly, but this is from the shearer. It was a lovely flock of merinos that were mostly used to keep the grass down and as sort of like lawn ornaments. I mean this in the best sense. I mean, what a wonderful way to trim your lawn.
Yeah. Nearby growing merinos? Like, I didn't know that anyone was raising merinos here.
That's why, even though I'm based in Western Mass, when I found a shearer who said, I've got this merino that's not being used, do you want it? For a very good price, actually. I said, absolutely.
Merino that's not being used!
Yes, I know. And then I don't have access to that anymore, so what you had was almost some of the last of that.
Merino wool is unbelievably soft to work with, and it's got unbelievable drape. It's shiny, it's fantastic, it's like the cashmere of wools.
Yeah, I would be wearing the sweater right now, and I will put it on for photo opportunities, but it's too hot to wear that sweater. Yes. Right,
it is much too hot for that sweater.
When you are selling finished yarns and wools for people to knit with and work with, you do it under Bloom Woolen Yarns, right? But we are at Growing a Bunch Farm, so can you talk a little bit about your two businesses and how they interact?
Right, so Growing a Bunch was just the seed of what became Bloom Woolen Yarns, because it started with these sheep. But the other half of Growing a Bunch Farm is my summer programming that I do for kids. And so we have a couple programs each summer. We do a sewing workshop and a general fiber arts workshop. For fiber arts, they will learn or practice embroidery, knitting, crochet, weaving, spinning, and we will go through that sheep to shawl or sheep to sweater experience. They'll dye some wool, and we'll also do needle felting and wet felting are huge hits. And we go on pasture walks, and we get them out, and we do yard games. And so that's the fiber arts workshop. And then we also added on about 5 years ago a sewing workshop. My two older daughters, who are now a young mom and a graduating homeschooling senior this year. They started with me helping with the programs 9 years ago, but they at the same time were learning how to sew at a 4-H group in Shelburne with Lonnie York, who owns York Farm, whose wool I also turn into yarn. And they have become excellent sewists. And so we took their skills and my sort of more mediocre beginner sewing skills. And because at this point, they can make corsets and quilts and costumes and all kinds of really elaborate things that I can't do. And we started the sewing workshop.
That's amazing. Are there still spots available for this summer?
only probably about two spots in the sewing workshop. Uh-huh. Yeah, the other is definitely full. And that's the make your own outfit in a week, or you can make a quilt for kids that just like to sew. You can make your Halloween costume, and historical garb has always been a big hit as mm-hmm. well.
You also, tapping into your goth side, have taught my child how to make chainmail.
Oh, yes. There's a lot of 10 to 14-year-olds in the Valley that are wearing chainmail bracelets. Those probably were taught by me and made by them.
Maybe we underestimate what kids are capable of when it comes to these sorts of skills. I'm curious if that's been your experience.
Oh, yeah. They astound me. The projects they make are gorgeous, and they work really hard and diligently. The fiber arts workshop, there'll be times where it's silent and all you hear is the needle felting. 10 kids needle felting, and then the sewing machines are going, and a lot of times I can't get them to stop for lunch. They're so committed and they're so into their project. So I really love it.
Why did you want to share those skills with other kids who weren't your own? Opening this up to a wider range of kids who will take those skills with them is an entirely different avenue.
Right, and that's the key. Hopefully they take the skills with them. There's so much value in learning knitting and sewing and mending. And so there's the joy in it. There's the restorative aspect of being able to sit down at the end of a hectic day and focus quietly. And when kids have handcraft tools in their hands, they do not have a phone in their hand. You know, the first things people ever made in history other than shelter was clothing. So this is an integral part of being a human. And then they have the understanding of where our clothing comes from, just like we want them to know where our food comes from. The next extension of that is, where does our clothing come from? Or I like to say, who grew your sweater? As you know, any seed that's planted in childhood, they could put it down for 10 years and then pick it back up at 25, and there you go. The seed has been planted.
That's how my knitting generally goes.
Yeah, I learned how to crochet when I was like 18, and I could probably do it again.
So oh, I'm sure many half-finished projects in my basement.
And I like to know that I know who grew my sweater. Some fancy gentleman in Rhode Island, but it was dyed right here in Asheville by my friend Lisa.
I mean, it feels a little bit too on theme.
I can't wait to be a fancy gentleman farmer myself.
What other types of wool are you getting besides the Shetland and apparently not Merino anymore, but like right. Not everybody's growing Shetlands.
I mean, I could show you. Wool,
sure.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know if that helps. With
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we take
it. Helps us understand it better.
Yeah.
Bye, sheep.
We could step into my studio, and then I can show you a little bit.
Sure.
Oh. Sorry. I didn't know you were a knitter. This is
oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. From, like, for the same reasons. Like, my mom taught me nice. Really, really young, and so I've been knitting since I was, like, 5 or 6.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, like, off and on, as
you do.
What do
you like to knit?
I like to knit hats because I can do a hat in a day, but I also like sweaters, which is why there's so many half-finished things. Like, I always want sweaters, and I never finish sweaters for myself. I just finish sweaters for other people.
Aww.
So, like, my sisters have, like, a couple of pieces, and, like my dad has one, but, like, the sweaters I've made for me are all half-finished in the basement,
aww,
like, still on, still on circulars.
Summer projects.
Well, depending on what I'm using.
Yeah, right. I know if it's too heavy.
Yeah.
That's why I like to make sometimes socks in the summertime. So here's
not
a really
across your lap, like it's not like
yeah, exactly.
Sweater.
No
yeah.
Afghans at the beach.
And especially if you're using like magic loop for sweaters instead of using double pointeds, which is what I've moved to exclusively because I'm bad at double pointeds. Everything just slides right off, and then I have to start over. It goes really quickly. It makes it so much easier to turn heels and make toes. It's so nice.
That's your free knitting lesson.
Yeah. So this is your dyeing studio.
Room.
Mud room. There's buckets of what is that dye and water
yeah.
And
yeah. So this is actually indigo rinse bucket, but I save it because there's valuable indigo that'll sink down to the bottom. This is my indigo vat. This is cochineal.
Cochineal is a little
it
bug.
It is a little beetle.
Yeah.
Oh wow! Are you using the real beetle?
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're dead and they're yeah. Imported. They're
right.
Not like I'm not.
You don't go out in the woods and get
no,
them.
No, because they grow on agave.
So is it only natural dyes that you're using?
I also have an organic dye which functions much like a traditional acid dye works, but it's got certified organic, and I use vinegar as the acid, so it's very safe. I'm dyeing in my kitchen still, and I have a couple of burners here, but mostly I'm in my kitchen, so it's got to be safe. One thing I can show you really easily is the difference between woolen spun yarns, which would be these guys, and this is what you want to wear in the winter. It's very warm. This is the yearling, so this is our sheep. Makes very different finished products. This is what I call like the hardiest. It's not like you're not going to make a tank top or a baby.
Feels a little rougher, maybe.
It's for layering.
And then you can contrast it with this, which is the fingering weight yarn, which is very silky, and the solstice, which is also very soft and silky and can make lighter garments, and that's like baby soft. This one is the one spun from Alchemy Fiber Mill. It's fin wool, very soft and lofty. These here that are soft and sort of shiny and glowing, those are made from Romney sheep that have Romney is so nice. It might be one
of my favorites. I mean, when you look back on it, totally.
Stop it.
Those were different times.
Here's like the last skein ever of that yarn that we made your sweater out of.
Oh, the merino wool. Yeah. Oh, wow.
What is this? This is fuzzy.
So that's not local, not domestic. I order them as a sample because that is a cross of Suri alpaca, which is a unique kind of alpaca, with some silk. And this was made in South America. But I ordered it because I have access to a whole bunch of Suri alpaca, and I want to make that kind of yarn. So I wanted to feel a couple different versions and think about how that might knit up and that kind of thing.
Where are you going to source your silk from?
You're really on it, yeah. So that would not be local. I would source it through our local mills, and it would be 20% silk. And I would contrast that to my other yarns by calling it Wanderlust. So it would be like a little special treat that you might add to your whole wardrobe of domestic and locally grown sweaters.
The irony to me, of course, being that like there are a lot of mulberry trees here. You can make silk from mulberry, and mulberry was brought in to feed Bombyx moths in part. So like if somebody was like super enterprising.
I've always wondered if anyone's going to get back into
time.
That. Yeah. The dream of the 1890s is alive in Northampton.
Right. Well,
it's a Portlandia joke.
Yeah, everyone was knitting and sewing clothes for their children. People were wearing glasses all the time, like contact lenses had never been invented.
Wait, are we talking about the 1990s?
No. The 1890s.
The dream of the 90s is alive in Portland.
That is what's happening with, say, linen. I think maybe even hemp, but closer to being brought back would be flax and linen. So there's like some local people working on that. I know there's a lot of flax happening in Vermont and I believe Pennsylvania. So, and of course out in California, but more and more. We've got to bring these things back. That's the best way to avoid tariffs. Yeah, the problem with all of these local fibers is that we don't have the infrastructure to spin them anymore, because I think it was between like say 90 and 2005 or something, we lost like 80-90% of our machinery was literally shipped overseas. I think a lot probably went to China, but I think a lot of that went to the Middle East as well. And so I think people gave up on those industries, off everything went, and then right on the tail of that we have this resurgence of people wanting and appreciating this local product, and now we're kind of like don't have the machinery for it. So every time a new mill opens, it's one step in the right direction. But that is why you brought up the bottleneck at the mills. That's why I'm waiting a year for my yarn to be spun and come back to me.
Talk about your relationship with the Fiber Shed and what that's allowed for you to do, like with this business and other avenues that you might not have considered without their help.
Yeah, so Fiber Shed is doing great things by bringing awareness to all the fibers, but they do focus on wool. They have made cloth, which is extremely valuable, because if you're going to make clothing, you need cloth, not just yarn. And so Peggy Hart is weaving cloth and blankets. I have worked with them. I would like to work with them more. I am sort of loosely one of the organizational members, but I don't have the time to put in right now. Ironically, because, well, half the time it's my kids and the family and that whole thing. And then my business is really doing great and busy. And so I can't really put in the hours to spend as much time on that. But, you know, there's more years in my life that I can devote to that.
Is this chainmail over here?
Told ya.
Not strictly related to wool, but
this is my mannequin usually is wearing this. That was my part of my previous.
And that's
life.
How you keep the peasants safe when the raiders come.
Yeah, wow. That's a nice look.
It's a beautiful dress with now a chainmail bra on it.
A handmade vintage indigo dyed dress with golden chainmail.
Back out to the barn.
You might notice that the barn does not look like a nice place to have a bunch of kids crafting. So my barn has pretty much three phases. Fall and winter, it's filled with 3-quart of firewood there and about 120 bales of hay on this side and up in the loft. Once the wood is gone, it's spring. I start collecting all my wool. I've probably got about 30, maybe 50 fleeces in here right now that I'll be skirting and driving off to the mills. And after that's gone, it's a complete transformation. All the large doors are opened, it's airy, it's cleaned up, it's no longer dangerous, and all the craft goodies come out.
Where does this battery go?
That's the electric fence.
I know. But when the kids are in here crafting, does it stay there?
So it does, but it's not turned on.
Great.
What happens if I touch these two things?
No, stop.
You get electrocuted. Ask me how I know. No. The sheep fence. The sheep are trained well enough to the fence that when kids are here working and running around, then I just turn it off and it's fine.
Our focus has largely been on the farm, but I'm curious where people can find your yarn.
So the yarn is at bloomwoolenyarns.com. And then the kids programming is at growingabunchfarm.com.
Thanks. And then are you at farmers markets or anything else like that?
I don't do farmers markets. I do fiber festivals,
There's one coming up soon, right?
Yes. So we have Mass Sheep and Wool 50th year, and sadly the last one. It's like the end of an era.
Wow.
I know. So that's going to be this upcoming weekend at the Cummington Fairgrounds.
And this is the last one.
It is the last one. So come and support.
We talked to them about it last year.
Or the year before. I don't remember.
Last year.
Yeah.
I think it's been maybe brewing. I don't know if there's any hope. There's a couple murmurs, you know, people who are saying, I don't know. Is it too late? Can we save it? I don't know.
But it's another thing where, like, the older people who are raising sheep for wool, like, started this in the 50s, late 60s, and they are too old to keep organizing this every year, and there hasn't been anyone to come up behind them and really take it over.
Maybe Mass Sheep and Wool should team up with Hampshire College and save each other.
Oh. That feels weird.
I don't know how that will work.
Are you at the New England one at the Big E in November?
I am. That one is amazing. So much fun because it's got so much fiber and it's got the animals.
I have re-entered with the merino wool sweater from the fancy gentleman wool that was dyed by Lisa.
What was this dyed with?
Because it's a beautiful kind of lavender, almost purple.
I dyed it with the GOTT certified organic dye. Yeah.
Was Mr. Rogers famous for purple?
No, he had all sorts of different colors. My wife loves purple, so I wanted a purple one. I also love purple. But what Mr. Rogers was famous for that not everybody knows is, do you know what I'm about to say?
That his mother knitted his sweaters.
That every one of the sweaters he wore on his show for all those years was knit by his own mom.
Yeah. Oh my
God. So my moms of all of the community of Western Mass, and turns out some fancy gentleman from Rhode Island, my daddy from Rhode Island, teamed up.
Your daddy from Rhode Island?
Teamed up to make this Mr. Rogers sweater for me. Wow. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Mr. Rogers couldn't be more wholesome.
I know.
Like, no, his mom knit his sweaters.
I am making daddy jokes about it.
Those sweaters, she's not using anything that's heavier than worsted weight at most.
No, she doesn't. In fact, this is worsted, but a lot of them are smaller. But of course, time was of the essence, you know, to make the sweater.
Well, I think it's bested. And you can even actually, out of the CW Mars library system, get a book that has all of the different patterns for the Mr. Rogers sweaters if you wanted it one yourself.
Wow. I'm learning so much.
And they have zippers.
Yeah.
She liked to use zippers and not buttons.
Let's make the most of this. Oh, hold on. Hold on to the bottom of the sweater so I can do it. Beautiful day. That was more teamwork. Yeah. Okay, I'm taking this off now because it's wicked hot. Well, thanks for showing us around the farm.
Thank you so much. It's been fun.